This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us. Hour number three. We keep rolling along this morning here on Wake Up Call. All right. We are going to talk to Dennis Bernstein coming up at 40 past the hour. NHL Stanley Cup Finals. We go to game four Wednesday night. Avalanche still up 2-1. Lost last night by a score of 6-2 as the Lightning bounced back after losing 7-0 in game number two in Colorado. Now, the Avalanche have not won a cup since 2001, while the Lightning are looking for their third straight Stanley Cup and their fourth overall. Now, the Avalanche have come into this postseason as they weren't the best team points-wise. I think I went to Florida, but they certainly were the biggest threat to anybody. They were fast. They had good goaltending. They had a wave and wave of depth that could come off the ice. The Lightning came in with experience. You know, winning against Montreal, winning against Dallas, taking these cups, and also building a really solid team, but not as fast as the youthful Avalanche. That Avalanche team is young and very, very quick. And it showed that in game two so much that we kind of, at least from my point, I thought we were, you know, that was going to be the cup deciding game. We were just like, I don't know if the Lightning can overcome this. But it was a good game last night. Dennis Bernstein will join us coming up this hour. We're also getting the NBA draft. I should say mock draft. I've just been reading too many of those these last couple of days. That is going to be on Thursday night. And I'm a big NFL draft guy in April. It's not neck and neck with the NBA draft. I think the NBA draft is a couple of notches down from the kind of excitement that I feel about the NFL draft, when in reality, the NBA draft is more effective in terms of fortifying your future than the NFL draft is. Unless you're getting a franchise quarterback, a lot of guys are going to take a while before they really start being productive. You start thinking of guys making impacts as, you know, third-year guys. But the NBA draft, you can really change the image of your franchise rather quickly. Sometimes it works out immediately. Sometimes it does take a little bit of time. Jabari Smith out of Auburn is expected to go number one overall to the Orlando Magic, but people do like Chet Holmgren out of Gonzaga, whether he goes number two to Oklahoma City or he ends up going number one to Orlando. Thursday night is the NBA draft. We'll get into that coming up. Talk a little bit more about the Kyrie Irving situation in Brooklyn and Stanley Cup. Game four Wednesday night. What happened in game three? It's all coming up in hour three of Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio. Big news this morning, Brooks Koepka has decided to go to the LIV Golf Tour, which, by the way, will be teeing off next week at Pumpkin Ridge in Oregon. And this is the way it's described. This sounds like fun. This sounds like Halloween Town. So Pumpkin Ridge, featuring holes from both Ghost Creek and Witch Hollow. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it does.
Is there like, do you have to hit the ball through the haunted castle and Dracula's coffin? Now, never mind. It was a mini golf joke.
Do you have to enter through a maze?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
A cornfield maze.
Exactly. They're going to be stopping in Boston, Bedminster, that's in New Jersey, Chicago, Bangkok, Miami, and Jeddah. That's going to be in Saudi Arabia, of course.
So are these places receiving backlash?
Yeah. Is anybody calling Pumpkin Ridge and going, I'm canceling my tea time for 3:30 next week?
Yeah. Or, you know, the fact that it's going to be in Boston.
Yeah. Are people in Boston going to go, oh, we don't want your tour here. We just had the Open. But Chicago? Bedminster's nice. That's a nice golf course. That had the U.S. Women's Open there. A couple of years ago, I was living in New Jersey. I stopped by to see that a couple of days. That was pretty fun. Miami is going to be at Doral. Remember Doral? Used to be a tour stop. I don't know. They don't do that anymore. The Blue Monster. Bangkok. Chicago. Rich Harvest Farms will be hosting an event. I never heard of that place. But anyway, Brooks Koepka is going. Here's what Brooks Koepka had to say prior to the U.S. Open being asked about all that LIV golf stuff.
I'm ready to play
U.S. Open. So, and I think it kind of sucks too. Y'all are throwing this black cloud over the U.S. Open, and I mean it's one of my favorite events, and I don't know why you guys keep doing that, but you know, more legs you give it, the more you keep talking about it.
Well, then sorry to ask another question about it, but not sorry enough not to do that. In some ways, it seems like they're offering something that would appeal to you. You're a guy who, you know, really gets up for the majors, really loves the majors. At the moment, it seems like it would be an opportunity to play less in between the majors and still play the majors. What is that attractive to you, or do you prefer your current setup?
I mean, I can come out here and play as little weeks as I want. I choose my own schedule regardless what tour I play. And come out here, I haven't played. I've played, what, match play, Augusta, PGA, and this one, so I can play as little as I want.
Yeah, but you can't keep your tour card after if you do that long enough. The PGA Tour wants you to play on the PGA Tour, right? They want you to play on the PGA. You can't just go to the majors and still be a tour. You could do it for a while because you have an exemption, but you can't. After a while, they go, yeah, no, you need to be playing in certain events. I think that was a good question she asked. That was not. I liked her aggressive approach, though. She wasn't going to get bullied by Brooks Koepka. I hate when athletes do that, too.
I think that's Christine Brennan, right?
Is it?
I think so.
Okay.
Who doesn't? She, you know, pro.
She doesn't back down. She
doesn't care.
All these athletes do the same thing. Whenever they don't want to talk about something, they always blame the media. You guys, that's all you care
about.
Yeah,
you're just putting a black cloud over the U.S. Open.
I'm here to enjoy the U.S. Open.
It's my favorite event.
No, I'm sorry, Brooks, if the fact that some world-class players are going to play in this LIV golf event and it's fracturing the PGA Tour, that we might want your opinion about it.
And then, you know, a week later, not even a week later, 2 days later after the tournament.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, you're going to go do it. I'm sorry,
he
Brooks.
He knew it at the time, right?
Can you talk about the milkshakes that they're serving at the country club? Are you getting proper towel service in the locker room? I hear the peanuts are honey roasted. Is that true? Is Bridgestone bringing the new T57 golf ball or the T58 golf ball? What does he think they are going to ask him? Golly, these people. The arrogance and the pompousness of these guys drive me crazy. Yeah, I'm sorry that in your world that it makes you uncomfortable. You can avoid the question. You can say, I don't know. Yeah. But to all you care about is the lecture. Cuz you're going to play in the tour. Stop it. It's ridiculous. It's so silly. Guys, same things. They act like they're the smartest people in the room, and they're not the smartest people in the room, right? They think they can you know, somehow spin it. So it doesn't, no, she read that beautifully. She's like, yeah, you know what? There's something attractive about this. And he's like, I can play as little as I want. Yeah, okay, that's true. But eventually the tour comes and they take your card away because you're not showing up to the events that they need you to. You think the PGA Tour is just going to let anybody just play the majors? And you can play two events on the PGA Tour? The PGA Tour exists. The thing is that what supports like a tournament that nobody goes to is the fact that the tour has other events everybody goes to. Right? Like, that's how it works. So they make you go to a certain number of events. You can choose those, but you better be playing in a couple of these events. And the guys tend to choose the same ones that are good, that the ones they like, right? Like almost everybody goes to the Waste Management Open at the TPC Scottsdale. Almost everybody plays at Riviera. Almost everybody plays the AT&T Pebble Beach. Most everybody plays at Arnold Palmer's event. Most everybody plays at Jack Nicklaus's event. Most everybody plays the Travelers Championship because for whatever reason, and I have no idea why, that course and that tournament treats players so well that they love going there, have been for a long time. And there are other events that just, nope, sorry, we might get a few guys, but that's about it, and we'll see. And that's the way it's always been. And the tour goes, we can support the events where the biggest star might be no one you've heard of, but the reality of it is when we do have an event where everybody shows up, that sort of helps those stops that don't. That's how that works. So, yeah, you can play as little as you want, but eventually they go, and you're not on the PGA Tour. So if you want your card back, you can probably, you know. Because, again, those majors, they give you some exemption, but they don't give you a lifetime exemption. I mean, to win their major, to win the PGA Tour's major, the Players' Championship, is a 10-year exemption on tour. Like, winning the U.S. Open doesn't give you a lifetime exemption. So, yeah, but this is different. But here's the other thing. Then the follow-up question would be this. Okay, so you just asked the question like she just asked. This seems attractive. You can play a handful of events in the majors. And he goes, oh, I make my own schedule. I can. Well, guess what? If they're going to give you nine figures, you get to not make your own schedule now. Because I'm telling you right now, June 30th at Pumpkin Ridge, you better be there. And July 29th, when they're in Bedminster in New Jersey, guess who has to be there? And in Chicago on September 16th, you got to be there. And do you like flying? Because you're going to be traveling around the world. Because on October 14th, you better be at Jeddah. And by the way, if you want to go on the other side of the world, on October 7th, you better be in Bangkok. So if they're paying you nine figures, guess what? You now no longer control your schedule because they're not going to let you show up to Portland and then maybe I'll go to Jeddah, but I'll still cash your nine figures. That's not how that's going to work. So maybe Brooks Koepka has it better in the fantasy land that he's living in where the PGA Tour allows him to show up five times a year or two times a year or one time a year and the majors, whatever he wants. Because the LIV Golf Tour is not going to let you do that for the amount of money that they're paying. Now that they got you, Brooks Koepka, enjoy the travel to these events. And if you say, well, I wanted to go to those, yeah, it's a little different because we now know that you kind of have to. So if your reality on the PGA Tour is you don't have to go to any one of their things, you just change your reality because now you have to go to all of these. And while there's only 10 or 8 or whatever it is, I think there's 8. There's only 8. There's still 8 you better be at because they're paying you a lot of money to be there. Right? This isn't free money. The Saudi Arabian government is backing this, isn't just giving you cash because they like you. They think your wife is hot. Right? They're not doing that. They expect you to show up. They expect you to play 54 holes, shotgun like everybody else on YouTube, and you better enjoy it because that's what they're paying you for. I like Brooks, too. I like Brooks Koepka, but that's silly. I don't think he saw that one coming. But nevertheless, I think he knew at the time he was saying that. Oh, crap. Because
that's a couple days. That's what's so, that's amazing when you know, listening to that soundbite after the fact, you know, just like putting in correlation. I'm like, you had to know, I think that was Wednesday of last week.
Right.
It wasn't, you didn't make this decision on Sunday or Monday, right? I mean, didn't all of a sudden just go, you know, they sent me that LIV contract over they sent after he didn't win the U.S. Open.
I wish somebody would have asked, tell me how I just put a black cloud over this. Tell me how it's a black cloud. Is LIV golf bad for golf?
Yeah.
Is LIV golf terrible for golf? So I'm going to read into what you just said. I didn't say it. You said it. So now you said that by asking about LIV Golf at the U.S. Open, I'm putting a black cloud over the U.S. Open. What do you mean by black cloud? Is the two tours good for the sport? Is it terrible for the sport? Is that such a dark thing that by bringing it up, I'm invoking the name of Voldemort into this place and we should all fear it?
When should I bring it up?
Yeah, when
should
I bring it up?
Do I bring it up at the Travelers? Do I bring it up at, you know, the John Deere Invitational, or, you know, name your random PGA.
That's another great question. All right. So, okay. So if I ask you about LIV Golf, and since you won't define it, I'll define it. It's a black cloud because it's a tour that could kill the PGA Tour. Let's just go with that.
Right.
All right. But let me just ask. So when should I ask you? At dinner? At the car rental place? The airline? Name me something you hate so that a black cloud covering over it isn't so obvious.
And should it not be during a press conference, or should I get TMZ?
Yeah, should I get TMZ? Should I stand by outside your house? What? Like, what do you want? Like, when do you want this question? Because it's coming.
Yeah. I may have to send it carrier pigeon. We'll find out.
We'll find out. God, this thing's a mess. These guys, you know what? I can't believe, like, I just have this little radio show, but you know what? You can pay me $1 million. I will handle all of your training on how to answer these things. I swear to God, no one is teaching these guys how to answer these questions. They have nobody going, come here. Here's what you're going to say, okay? You want to get out of this? This is what you say. No, they all get up there and they go, what about LIV Golf? Black Cloud, I came here to enjoy baked beans and clam chowder, and you're killing the vibe. Stupid. And you just say, hey, you know what? Here's my thought on it, and let it be, and minimize that so when you jump ship next week, it doesn't look like you're avoiding everything or embarrassed to be asked this. Like, seriously, Phil Mickelson has been in the public eye for, what, 30 years? Right? He looked like he had no idea how to answer any of this stuff.
None whatsoever. None.
Like, I could tell, I would sit with Phil and go, Phil, there's only 5 or 6 questions here. That's it. Nothing's going to come out of left field. Here's about 5 or 6, I mean, questions. That's all they got.
The other thing, too, the LIV people, publicists, whoever yeah. it is, handed out cheat sheets, remember?
I know. They were like, here. And they were like, can you put this in Arial font? Because I can't really read this. What are they doing?
I guess he didn't read past, you know, first, make yourself look like a villain.
Yeah, right? Exactly. I know. What a mess. Well, enjoy Brooks Koepka, the LIV tour. Enjoy it.
So excited who's going to be next.
I know. I can't. Colin Morikawa? It could be anybody.
It's like, is this a good, are we just going to have a cliffhanger?
Yeah.
Like, it's not going to come today. We're like, oh, my God, what's going to happen next on this show?
I know. What if one day Rory looks around and goes, nobody here? I better go over there.
I think it was Will Gray pointed this out. This was the most perfect time for that Drive to Survive people.
Yes.
Program on the PGA Tour. I can't wait for that to come out.
I can't wait. What a great. Oh, my God. That's so funny. That is a great point, Will Gray. All right. It's Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio. Don't forget, Dennis Bernstein is going to join us 40 past the hour. We're going to talk about what happened last night in Tampa as the Lightning put on a show after they had a show put on them. All that's coming up as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, Dennis Bernstein will join us from the fourth period. He'll talk Stanley Cup playoffs. It's coming up in 10 minutes. Hey, by the way, I just sold a copy of It's Better to Be Feared. Michael just bought it online. So, look at me. I should write a book. I don't think I'd be good at writing a book. I mean, it takes a lot of work and a lot of research and a lot of editing, and I don't know if I have the patience for it.
You should get a kickback, by the way.
I know, I should. I should get like 25 cents for this order.
At least.
It is a good read, though. I talked about this last hour, man. That book is really good. I'm like, you know why? I love books like this. Like I said earlier, John Feinstein's Season on the Brink was one of the first books that I sort of read that had that sort of approach where it was like John Feinstein got inside access and started writing what he was seeing. He did it with the Baltimore Ravens. He did it with tennis. He did it with golf. He just did these books where he would just embed himself and then get the stories behind the stories. And this has a lot of that. But when I was reading it, and I said, you know, I'm not a Patriots fan. Even though I grew up in New England, I was a Steelers fan first, so I never really was a Patriots fan. But I was reading it going, look, I'm reading this not as a fan of my favorite team. I'm reading this because this is the most dynamic player-coach relationship that we've had in the last, I don't know, 50 years in terms of success. Like, maybe even more than that. Like, it's one of the most incredible relationship sports has ever produced. A guy who came almost out of nowhere, played at Michigan, so I don't want to say Michigan's nowhere. It's not like he played out of like Michigan, you know, community college. Went to Michigan, But you have a guy that could play the position. How many quarterbacks can have a sustained level of excellence for 15 years? Forget 20. 15. And just consistently good, consistently a threat every single time. No rebuilding, none of that nonsense. Always, always, always a team to reckon with. And this coach that, you know, that's the other thing that was part of this book that I also enjoyed was that Bill Belichick had a rough time in Cleveland, and he had this sort of history of, all right, so then he's back with Parcells. Parcells leaves. They lead New England to a Super Bowl. Parcells has problems with Robert Kraft. They don't get along. He leaves to go become the head coach of the Jets, but Kraft wants, you know, some sort of compensation for that. Belichick becomes the coach when Parcells sort of like Belichick's waiting to be a head coach again, but Bill Parcells is kind of hemming and hawing about when he's leaving. And then he wants to be, you know, Robert Kraft is like, you're my guy. And Belichick, when he becomes the head coach of the Patriots and he's got Drew Bledsoe, they're not winning enough. And he feels like he's going to lose his job. So this sort of idea that Belichick was just like, when we talked about whether it was Belichick or Brady, it really, I hate to be simple, but I'm like, again, I'm halfway through this book. It really was both, right? It really was. I mean, Belichick had not established himself as a solid NFL head coach, a secure NFL head coach, until Brady was the quarterback and they won that Super Bowl. And even the next year when they, you know, they lost, people were wondering, well, are they just a flash? You know, did they not, like, there's a line in that book that I really, really stuck out with me. So the Patriots won the Super Bowl in 2002, you know, the 2001 season, but 2002, then they won it again. But Theo Epstein was the general manager of the Red Sox. And in 2004, he wins the World Series. He puts a team together, and that team wins the World Series. And yeah, we all know the history of the Red Sox, and everybody lost their mind. Everybody was crazy. And it was like Theo got there with that one driven purpose, right? That one purpose was to win a World Series title, right? Not build a dynasty, build another one on top of another one on top of another one. The goal was get this out of the way. Get the first one, 86 years, all of that stuff. You know, my grandfather can die in peace, all that nonsense. But the reality was, is when he won it, he knew his life changed. And he knew that there was two people in his town who went through the exact same thing just a couple of years before. So Theo reaches out to Bill Belichick to get his advice on what am I in for? What advice can you give me? We just won the World Series in this town. And Belichick goes, you're beeped. That's it. That's all he says. That's his advice. You're screwed without saying screwed. If you get my drift. That's the advice. And then so from that point on, Epstein is chasing. Belichick is chasing. Brady is chasing. And they're, at least for those two, because I kind of got off Theo's story for a bit, but at least for those two, they were never satisfied. Right? And that's kind of the way competitors are. You know, obviously you want more and more and more. But the way those two played into that for each other, when we talk about the brilliance of Belichick and the brilliance of Brady, this book really is starting to make the case that who knows where Tom Brady would have been under any other coach without that system, without that Patriot way, without that complete and utter preparation. And who knows where Belichick would have been if he didn't have the quarterback that could execute almost everything that they asked him to execute at the time they needed him to execute it. Like, it really is fascinating. I know I've talked about this book this morning, but trust me, I don't do a lot of book reviews because I don't really read a ton, but I'm enamored with this. Dennis Bernstein, I'm enamored with this series now, the Tampa Bay one. How'd they do it? We'll talk about that next on Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, game three last night of the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. Tampa Bay with a 6-2 win coming off a 7-0 loss in game two. All right, I'll admit it. I thought this series was going to be really problematic for Tampa Bay with the way the Colorado Avalanche won that game two. But they had a little bit of a rout of their own in game three, and now it looks like we have a series. Well, do we? Dennis Bernstein joins us from thefourthperiod.com to help us break down what we're seeing so far in this series. How are you, Dennis?
Doing great, Tony. Great to talk Cup Final with you this morning.
I will tell you, after game two, I said this team is too fast, this team is too quick, they got good goaltending, everything was looking good for the Avalanche. I've never seen Tampa Bay beaten like this in the postseason the last couple of years. That being said, going back to home ice can lift teams. How did Tampa Bay pull this off last night?
I think they were reminded, Tony, that they were down 0-2 to the Rangers, and they hadn't played a home game yet. So they played to their identity, Tony. They got depth scoring. Vasilevsky was great in net last night. And more importantly, they got shots at Darcy Kuemper, the thing they really didn't do. I think they averaged 19.5 shots in the first two games. And so in the second game where they got routed, they got 16 shots. That's how they need to play. And they defended well. They blocked a ton of shots. They're a shot-blocking team, Tony. I think it's 27 or 28 last night. But they were in lanes, and they blocked dangerous scoring threats by the Colorado Avalanche. And it's what they needed to do. And even Vince Stamkos and guys like Pat Maroon said, like, we'll see what we're made of when we go home. And you know the old cliche in sports, Tony, it's not a series until the home team loses and nobody's lost it at home.
Yeah, it's baseball is going to be a little different because starting pitchers are starting pitchers, and that's where the momentum is.
Right.
But in basketball, we've seen this time and time again where you go on the road in a seven-game series, you lose two games on the road, and then you go home, and you get that one home win, but the series is yet to be defined because those things happen. Do you feel, though, that the way Tampa Bay played and the way they counteracted what Colorado does well, do you think that this series now really has changed?
I think it's changed because Tampa Bay knows now that they can beat this team coming off a terrible performance. And, Tony, look, game two, I've said it multiple times in the last couple of days, that was a perfect game pitched by the Colorado Avalanche. They did absolutely positively nothing wrong. So if I'm Coop, I'm saying, okay, that was their best. We were at their worst. We can still beat this team, and we can summon the skills. And so, look, Tony, the thing different that differentiated game three from the first two, Tampa Bay stars played like stars.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. They got contributions across the board, and I'm not a believer in Darcy Kuemper. And there may be a goaltending controversy because they pulled him. He didn't look good. A couple of goals, the first goal was Sorelli through the file, but it wasn't even a shot. Pat Maroon's goal wasn't great. So to me, what I would say is that we definitely have a series. Until Tampa loses a home game, I think they've won 7 or 8 straight. Like, this looks starting to look again like a 7-game series. I think the only disappointment, Tony, is that I'd like to see more competitive games in 2 and 3. Game one, when they went 4-3 overtime and Tampa rallied from down 3-1, I'm like, okay, this is all the hype that we talked about is going to live up to it. Well, the hype in 2 and 3 from a drama standpoint isn't there, but it's clearly, and like Nathan McKinnon said before the series started, like, it's best on best. And you're seeing Tampa Bay's best right now because they desperately need it. This is clearly the best team they've played the entire playoff run.
All right, let's get to Darcy Kuemper. How much of a controversy now do you think the Avalanche really have as they go into game four?
I don't think it's a controversy because he's your guy. He was out injured in the St. Louis series, came back. And I'm not a big fan of Francouz, and I think that's the problem. It's not that Kuemper versus Francouz. It's neither one of them as good as Vasilevsky, and it's the one area in the Cup Final that Tampa Bay has a decided advantage. So do I think he'll go back to game four? Yeah, because you can't do that to the guy who's truly your starter. And what happens to his confidence is you're up in the series and you got to pull him out. So to me, you got to go with Kuemper because there's not much difference between Kuemper and Francouz. It's the team in front of him that needs to play better. Just like the team in front of Vasilevsky needed to play better in after games one and two.
What did you think of John Cooper's decision to leave Vasilevsky in game two? He's getting peppered. He's giving up goals, mm-hmm. but he doesn't get pulled. And I don't know if there's a psychological thing that the coach is saying, look, in the end, you're our guy no matter what. We're not doing this to you. Just stay in there until the end. We know the next game you'll be fine. Or is there another reason that he would be in the whole game?
Well, a couple of things, Tom. Brian Elliott hasn't played in weeks. So if you put Elliott in, that game's probably 12-0, not 7-0. So you probably lowered the score by that. And I'm sure after two periods, Cooper, the goalie coach, and Vassie got together and said, all right, do you want to keep playing? And I think Vassie's mindset with Tony was, we lose as a team. My guys out there getting their brains bit in. I should be out there too. So I think it was a team thing. I'm sure there was consultation between the goalie, the coach, and the goalie coach, and he decided to go forward. And you know, I don't have a problem. I'm with you. I would have pulled him. Like the only thing that would have happened in the third period of game two is that he could have got hurt. Only bad things would have happened. But they powered through that, and again, they bounced back in front of the home fans last night here in Tampa, and now we definitely have a series.
Because it's just to me, it's like you have one of the best goaltenders in the world. He's getting destroyed, but if you remind him he's the best goaltender in the world, you get 37 saves and two, you know, giving up just two power play goals.
Yeah, I just think it was a couple of things, but you know, playing at altitude. And when I talk to people who have played in Denver, like, it's not the first, like, if you're there for extent, it's not the first day, but it's the second and third day that you start feeling it. And I think that's what happened in game two because that team was overmatched. But again, it was just, and Cooper said himself, that's why I love John Cooper as the coach, Tony. He said they need to man up. He challenged his team saying, okay, if everybody thinks that we are the champions that we are, and the conversation started to creep towards, oh, they got beat bad in games one and two, and they beat Dallas and Montreal in the cup finals. This is like, you know, are the championships legitimate because they were COVID years? You're seeing now that this team certainly deserves it, and if they can find a way, and Tony, if they do rally and win the series, they'll be the first team to be down 0-2 in conference final and cup final and wind up coming back to win. So not a surprise, the method and how they won the game last night. They have to replicate it tomorrow night here in Tampa.
What do you do as a hockey team to neutralize an opponent's speed? What are the things that you do to get – because, boy, that Avalanche team is so fast.
Oh, yeah, coming out of their zone. Here's how you do it. If they don't have the puck, they can't skate with it. And they won the puck possession battle last night. They were getting destroyed with respect to puck possession in Tampa and Denver, and they equalized that out. So to me, I just think it's having home ice, and not for nothing, the Cirelli line that wasn't good in Tampa was far better. It limited the chances. And like I said, they blocked a lot of shots. So to me, they went back big games from their stars, block shots, and just playing in front of the home crowd. If you don't think home crowd makes a difference, and it used to not in the Stanley Cup final, but I think the Avalanche has won like 8 in a row at home, and I think Tampa's won 7 or 8 in a row as well.
So your thoughts on these two teams? I mean, this is such a unique, not unique, but this is so interesting to me because I've been watching the Avalanche grow to this, and then I've seen the Tampa Bay Lightning, you know, dominate over the last couple of years in winning these cups. When you look at this, is this kind of what kind of matchup is this? Is basically what I'm trying to get at.
It's a matchup of a veteran team that's been there before, that is a more physical team, has net front presence, certainly have stars and have the best goalie in the world, against a team that's not been here yet, right? So that was the main challenge. Remember, Colorado hasn't won the Cup since 2001. So I think they proved themselves, certainly in the St. Louis series, that was a baptism by fire. Because remember, go back to that game six, Tony. Darren Helm scored with like a minute, a second and a half to go. If that goes to overtime and St. Louis wins, they're in a game seven. So I think it's a situation where it's best on best, but you see just the top-end talent in the league, and that's why ESPN and TNT wanted it, because when this game at its best and its players at its best, it's so entertaining. But again, I picked Colorado in six. I'm comfortable with that pick. But the people that were saying after last night, 1-0, that Tampa's done and they're going to get swept, well, they don't know that Tampa Bay team very well.
Exactly. They have so many players, the Avalanche do. They come at you in waves, but Andrei Burakovsky, who did not play, does that matter at all to the game last night?
Yeah, I think it mattered a bit. I think the bigger thing that matters is the status of Dennis Kadri, who's their second-line center, who had 87 points this year, who makes them a much more dangerous team on the road. And that's the issue. See, on the road, Tony, Coop gets his choice of who he's trying to stop, that top line, the Nathan McKinnon's line. After that, without Burakovsky in there and without Kadri, the second line, sure, they can beat you, but they're not going to dominate play. And I think that's the key. That's the issue. So to me, it was all the thing. And plus, they're at sea level. It's humid here, so maybe there's a little unfamiliarity by the Avalanche, who really haven't played here in months. So to me, and it's just, again, I don't think Coop had to say a lot. His words were chosen very succinctly, but I think it was a conversation between guys like Hedman and Kucherov and Stamkos and Vasilevskiy saying, hey, you know, we're better than this. We're way better than this, and it's a supremely confident team. I think they just relied on their formula and wound up winning the game last night really convincingly.
Dennis, great stuff, man. Really appreciate your time, and we'll definitely hook up with you as this series continues. Thank you so much, as always.
Always great being on Sports Map Radio with Tony. Thanks for the time.
You got it. Again, Dennis Bernstein, fourthperiod.com on the NHL Stanley Cup Finals. Great, great. This is a good series now. I really worried that it wasn't going to be. But, I would love to see Colorado win the Cup. I'd love to see the people I know very, very well. Mark Mosier, who's the television voice, was the longtime radio voice for the Avalanche, and a number of other people that within the organization I know. But the reality of it is I personally want an entertaining series with good storylines. A sweep is one storyline. A seven-game series gives you multiple storylines on how we got to that point. Now, that's what I'm looking forward to seeing. And also, I think, too, to see a champion trying to defend in the finals, you want to see if they how they do that, right? Like, look, if it was the Rangers, if it was Florida, if it was Carolina, if it was Boston, you could sit back and go, okay, look, you know, these teams are playing, you know, and this, but it's because Tampa Bay is the two-time Stanley Cup champion. I want to know what fortitude they've got when they're down 0-2, right? I mean, it's your cup. You're just going to let the Avalanche come to Tampa. And also, I think he made a really good point about the two settings. You've got, not only do you have sea level, right? But it's hot. It's warm. It's humid. Then you go to altitude, and he's right. If you've ever been to a higher altitude place, it's not the initial, you know, you don't get off the plane and go, oh, where's the oxygen? It's like after a while, you're like, I'm getting acclimated. I can feel my body where, and that's where you get it. And the Nuggets used to try, the old Nuggets under Doug Moe and whatnot, they used to try to run you out of the building. Like they used to remind you were at 5280. You know, that was their big thing. And they'd run until you passed out because of the lack of oxygen. And Tampa, totally different setting. Two totally different settings for the Stanley Cup Finals. Good stuff from Dennis Bernstein. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, it's Wake Up Call at Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Dennis Bernstein on our progressive guest line, talking NHL Stanley Cup Finals. Game 4, by the way, will be Wednesday in Tampa. We can't get enough of Brooks Koepka. The news this morning that he's jumping a LIV tour. And this was some of his quotes from before the U.S. Open. So here's what when he was asked, are you thinking about making the jump over to LIV?
Brooks, is there a figure at which you would swap tours? Does that exist? Is it as simple as that?
I haven't given it that much thought.
Really?
I don't understand. I'm trying to focus on the U.S. Open, man. Like, I legitimately don't get it. I'm tired of the conversations. I'm tired of all this stuff.
That sounds exactly like a guy who knew exactly what he was going to be doing once tournament was over. That's exactly what you would say. Like, seriously, like, all right, I challenge the world to give me three people who bought that. Give me three. Give me one person who believed that was true. Like, you're a professional golfer, and you didn't give any thought whatsoever to the possibility of making nine figures on a Saudi Arabian back tour and the controversy around it. And what it would be like. You never once, not one second thought about that. Knowing you could do it because your agent probably was asked if you would consider it. And we are being led to believe by this guy that he never one time thought about this at all. And he's like, I'm trying to concentrate on the U.S. Open. Baloney. You look like that when you were winning majors, it looked like the last thing you were thinking about was the golf tournament you were playing in.
Yeah, I got another quick one. This is when he was asked about maybe playing for somebody else, playing, you know, other than the PGA?
I mean, there's been no other option to this point. So where else are you going to go?
Live.
I mean, as of last week, that's it. I wasn't playing last week. So I'm here. I'm here at the U.S. Open. I'm ready to play U.S. Open.
Man. Those reporters were all over him. Where else are you going to go? Live.
Live.
Yeah, but that was
like, last week.
He acts like it just sprung up out of nowhere on Thursday of the week prior to the U.S. Open. Like, what did they do? Did they play? What happened there? Yeah, a bunch of 48 guys in secret got together in London and played a golf tournament. You know, you might have heard about that.
I really wish he would have said, last week I was getting married.
Yeah, right, right. He was.
He was.
Yeah.
I mean, just that would have been easy to fall back on, right? It's like, it's really, you know, I paid attention to my new wife.
I was paying attention to my new model wife. I have no time for the live tour. He could have answered that way. That would have been actually pretty good.
It would have been better than what he is saying.
Better what he would say. Yeah, that's exactly right. It's much better than what he
now,
was
in
saying.
Hindsight, we look back like, he was probably talking about it, thinking about it, but you know, he was getting married. We can understand that.
Yeah, no doubt.
But instead, we're looking like, he totally signed on the dotted line.
He is a trip, man. He is a trip. But he's now Liv Tours trip. So let's make that clear, because he's jumping ship. And he'll be at Pumpkin Ridge next week in Oregon, playing Ghost Ridge and Witch Hollow. Some holes on those courses. Good luck, Brooks Koepka. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.